You're listening to the Seasteading Today podcast, where we speak to entrepreneurs and researchers who are making the dream of seasteading a reality. The Seasteading Today podcast. Stop arguing and start seasteading.
Welcome, Seasteaders. Today, I'm talking with Grant Romant, the CEO of Ocean Builders, the company that built the first seastead off the coast of Thailand and is now building in Panama. We are at the Anarchapoco conference where we met last year when Grant first learned about seasteading. Grant has been working behind the scenes at Ocean Builders. The exciting story of Chad and Nadia can be followed on the First Seasteaders video series on YouTube, so we won't spend much time talking about that. Welcome, Grant.
Thank you, Carly.
So this podcast is for people interested in learning how to seastead. So I wanted to talk about how to develop a seasteading business. So can you tell us a bit about your background in business?
Sure. So I've been an entrepreneur since I was like 6 years old. I've done so many different things. And as an entrepreneur, you need to kind of develop a lot of skills to be able to get to the point of having a successful business. So I've been forced into learning how to master different areas and then eventually being able to outsource them more and more to the point where you have a little bit more time freedom so you're not working like crazy. I have a software development company right now that we build software for the beauty industry for a lot of the large beauty industry companies like Wella Professionals, Clairol, OPI, and many others. And that's kind of where I came from and have a lot of technical background. I wrote my first software program when I was 8, so I'm very technically and kind of usually ahead of the curve for technology. So a lot of the innovative things we're working on putting inside the next seastead is a lot of the tech that I've been researching for the last year.
Okay, we will definitely get into that. But first, I want to talk a little bit about last year at Anarchapoco when you first learned about seasteading and saw the video about Chad and Nadia putting their seastead off the coast of Thailand. So can you tell us about your reaction to that and seeing that video of what they had done? Tell us how you felt when you saw that video and learned about seasteading.
It's interesting because Joe from the Seasteading Institute always talks about that when he was talking to me for the first time, which we actually met on a connecting flight on the way to Anarchapoco, he saw my eyes light up and he could see that I got it. Like there's that moment where it's like, oh, wow, okay, this is what it could be. This isn't just about living in a boat or something or a house in the middle of nowhere, but there's so much more. This is just the start of something really big. And I've actually been able to see that look in a lot of people's eyes this weekend, which has been really amazing to see that same look that Joe was seeing in my eyes. So that's really been amazing. Last year I saw what Chad and Nadia had done, had accomplished. You know, people have been talking about doing for this for so long, and to see someone actually doing it and putting something in the water, it was just amazing. It was just like very inspiring because there's so many people that have talked about doing these very large projects, but getting them off the ground has always been very challenging because usually that takes hundreds of millions of dollars or billions of dollars. I was looking at a project many years ago, probably more than 20 years ago now, called the Freedom Ship. It was about building a 1 mile long ship that would float around the world every 2 years and stop at different ports of call. And I loved that project and I was trying to help them as well. And the problem with that was they needed $7 or $8 billion to get started. So it kept on dragging out and dragging out and dragging out, but they couldn't get any real traction. And it just came down to money. Mm-hmm. And that's when I saw this, what Chad and Nadia were doing, just putting the simple little proof of principle house in the water. It was more than anyone else has done, and they just did it, and that was very inspiring.
That's great. So I think a couple months after that, the Ocean Builders announced that they were doing a Seasteader certification adventure, and the Seasteading Institute helped and wanted to be involved and capture that on video. So I got to go and help try and capture that trip on video, but also visit the seastead and get a diving certification and a sailing certification. So kind of describe for us that time period between learning about Chad and Nadia. You know, did you reach out to them right away? And then the certification adventure, what was your thinking about the potential for this business?
So that weekend, last year's in Acapulco, we had Joe set us up with a video conference with Chad and Nadia pretty much right away. So I was like all in right then and there. And so I kind of feel a little bit responsible for everything, because I think it was because I was already going to be in Thailand in the next month that they started putting together the course at the time they did. And then, you know, we all went through the course, and then a week later, everything went down because they were announcing, you know, because they wanted to have that course done and have us there. And so it seems like maybe if I didn't go, they would have put it off or something.
Well, I'm glad that you did, because it was an amazing experience for me. And I'm so glad I had the opportunity to go to Thailand and see Ixtli, the first seastead. And while we were in Thailand together, we had a lot of conversations about the stages of the community and what we wanted to see and what were the best businesses to start so that we could start growing the seasteading community out there. So, you know, I think you're different from a lot of the people who first learned about Chad and Nadia, because it seemed to me that you immediately had you didn't just see the house as it was. You saw, especially with the design aspects and what it could be. And it seemed like you took action right away to make what your vision was of the future seasteading homes a reality. So can you tell us about that? And, you know, where do you think that vision came from? And you know, how did you see the path forward? And when we were in Thailand, you know, what were some of the businesses and what did you see the path forward for it in Thailand while we were there?
Okay. So my first thinking actually just 1 year ago at the conference was that this was amazing and I wanted to be part of it. And it was Thailand that was so far away from my home base in North America that it seemed like I could go, but I wouldn't be able, I could go for a couple of weeks at a time every couple of months, but it would be too much for me to move there. And then I was sitting watching Joe speak, and I was thinking, well, it would make so much more sense if we had like co-ownership or partial ownership, that we could share one and bring down the cost and have kind of have a stepping stone to getting there. And we don't have to be there all the time, and we could rent it out. And when we're not there, so we could, you know, have potential revenue if we rent it out on a rental platform. So that seemed like a really good starting place to like just have an Airbnb, because then people can come out and then they can experience it. They can see what it's like. They can see how amazing it is to live on the water. I've been living on the water in my home in Toronto, Canada for the last 3.5 years before last year. And I've absolutely loved it. I've always been kind of a water baby, but I loved waking up in the morning and being able to walk downstairs and get into the kayak or get on the paddleboard and go watch the sunrise at 6 o'clock in the morning or whatever time it was, or go watch the sunset or paddle to the little beach that we had and have a little picnic with friends. Mm-hmm. And it was just, to me, it was such an amazing way of living. I just loved it. And I saw my friends living on land, and it's like, why would you want to do that? It's not as beautiful. And it doesn't have the same benefits or the luxury or the lifestyle benefits. And in Canada, the place where we have them in Toronto, they're actually not allowed to build more because the government doesn't know how to classify them because they're not a house. They're actually in a marina. So they banned building more. And I thought that's the biggest injustice, because everyone should be living like this. Like, it's just such an amazing lifestyle. I just love it so much. And so when I saw what Chad and Nadia had done, I just was like, wow, okay, this opens the doors to other people being able to live there. And the package that it was in originally, like Ixtli in Thailand, was not the prettiest thing to look at. So I was, and the windows, you can't see my hands to show you how big the windows were, but they were like 3 or 4 inches wide by maybe 7 or 8 inches tall. So they're small. And in my house, in my floating house in Toronto, we had fairly decent sized windows and some large sliding glass doors, windows. And that was, it's amazing just to be able to sit there and watch the water. And I was always telling friends, I could just sit and watch the water flow by for hours or days, and either working or just, you know, sitting, drinking, and hanging out with friends, or just enjoying it, just relaxing. And so I love that, and to be able to recreate that, but give that same experience to other people is amazing. And so I was like, the whole week, seasteading week, I was seasteading certification course, I was pushing mostly Rudy to have bigger windows. And they said, well, the next version has much bigger windows, much bigger windows. So I was like, okay, good. That's solved. And then I saw the design for the new model, and the windows were about twice as big, which is, you know, tiny still. It wasn't even as big as your head. So that wasn't enough. So I kept on pushing and pushing and pushing. And it's like, okay, this is like the biggest selling feature, to have this view, like this view of unprecedented 360 degree window view of everything outside is just incredible. And you don't want to be looking at walls. Walls are not interesting.
So the team, the Ocean Builders team, it seems like there was a spot for you to come in and bring your love of modern technology and your design vision into this team. Is that correct? Did you feel that they welcomed you and that a formulation of that team worked out?
Yes. So Rudy's very, you know, he's very engineering, you know, minded. And so he doesn't get colors or design or that whole area, which is really, really important, but he has the engineering down. Mm-hmm. And that's really important. We need someone that has that understands the engineering and can make things happen. And Rudy's a bulldog. He pushes and pushes and pushes and gets things done. So we really need that. But for people to get inspired to want to live there, they need to be able to see a vision of what it could be, or what it could look like for them to live out there, not just these tiny little windows that, you know, they weren't getting to see the full picture of what it could be. So I wanted to come on board to help do that. And so I did have to, there was resistance because it was a big change. But they did come around, and it's opened up so much, that it's a radically different design, and there's so much interest in it.
So do you think that focus on design, that providing that visual for people, is the goal there to make it attractive to people who aren't familiar with seasteading as a movement or that concept of living independently?
Yes, I think like anytime you do something new, there's resistance because people don't understand it or they can't envision it. Like when the first car came out, the horses were around and people couldn't see a whole society running on cars. And so I really wanted to create the visuals so people could visualize it and see it and imagine themselves. So we focused a lot on creating a lot of visuals and videos so people can actually see themselves there and see what it could be. And we're kind of creating like a George Jetson on the water kind of look. And I think people have really taken to it. And it's creating a lot of excitement. There's a lot of people here at the conference this year that are like blown away by how far we've come in the last year and what's possible. And that, you know, everything we're talking about, it's not like when you go to a car show and there's these designs of futuristic cars that just never go anywhere, or you never see him 20 years from now. But like all the technology to make everything happen is available. Like it's all right there. And we're doing a hell of a lot of research to bring all the pieces together. And it's a huge job. We have a lot of us doing a lot of research. I have a team of people doing research and researching super high efficiency stoves and refrigerators and air conditioning and pumps and smart home technology things. And so it's a huge endeavor.
Would you give some advice to other entrepreneurs out there who want to do seasteading? And I mean, kind of on that same trend of making it appealing to people, even people who don't know the word seasteading.
Well, I think if you're interested in seasteading businesses, then a really good thing is just to come work with us in Panama. We have an incubator we've started. We want to encourage people to be creating aquapreneurial businesses that will help support seasteading, and you will be able to test out your technologies or your ideas on real hardware that we're building. So that's a great way, because then you can benefit from some of the work we're doing, and you can kind of piggyback on that and have a place to integrate your technology or your idea, your concept. We want to have, there's the ocean, this technology, I think this technology of the spar that we're going forward with is something that, it is a technology, and it is something that's opening up the water for being a place where you can actually live.
So tell us more about that. What is the spar and what does it have to do with the house?
It's allows us to live in higher waves than we would be able to normally. Like the home I was in Toronto, in the floating home, it couldn't take very much wave at all. Very, very low waves. It had to be in a very, very protected marina. And the spar allows us to be in waves of up to 5 meters. And the waves in the area we're currently building in is about half a meter. So we're like 10 times over-engineered, which is fantastic. It's great to have that over-engineering. But the interesting thing is we're also so many meters off the ground. So like our home is above the water. So we're somewhat detached from the water below. So that protects us a little bit from the salt and the elements. And that's helps us reduce the maintenance, which is a really big deal, living on the water. So that makes a huge difference. It's nice to be up and above and still have the stability of this design. So I think this technology is going to allow us to make living on the ocean affordable and available to people. And I think if we do this right, if we just build one incredible, beautiful seastead this year, that's all we do, that will be a huge, momentous event, because other people will see it and say, wow, that's what it could be like. That's what people have been talking about. That's what, you know, that's what the future could be. And I think it could start a huge movement. I think it could be the next frontier.
So why Panama? Why is that a good place to start this seasteading industry?
Panama's a great place because an issue with seasteading is waves. You need to have calm waves, and you want to be outside of the hurricane zone. And if you have hurricanes, you usually have big waves and big wind. And Panama is outside of the hurricane zone. So there's like a 900-kilometer wide band around the equator, around the world, that is outside of the hurricane zone, because the Coriolis effect of the Earth doesn't affect that part of the world. So Panama is in that range, and it's in that zone, so it's the perfect place. It's on land, it's closer to North America, it has it's close to my home base, so it was a no-brainer for me to be there. And it's a very open country for innovation. They like to support innovation. They're particular, the new government that just came into place back last July is really supporting, wants to support new innovations. They want to support particularly businesses that are big on aquaculture. And we have both those things going for us.
So I want to talk about two things you just mentioned. So can you tell us more about the Ocean Builders company and the company's relationship with the Panama officials?
So before we decided to move ahead in Panama, we started getting we started making contacts locally in Panama, and that kind of grew pretty quickly to the point where there's a lot of support in Panama for us by a lot of locals and some very well established business people in the country that were really helpful because they had successful businesses in the government. They knew people in the government and they had credibility. They had relationships. They had, you know, the doors just opened for us. So we spent maybe a month organizing the first trip and we had meetings. We were there for about a week and we had meetings with government officials at different levels of government every day, sometimes twice a day for a whole week. We were at the Panamanian version of the White House. We were meeting with the president's right hand. And then every level we met with the Panama Canal Authority, which is the Panama Canal Authority, the gentleman who runs that is almost as powerful as, like, he's pretty much the second most powerful person in the country, because the Panama Canal is the most prestigious. It's the thing that Panama is known for is the canal, and it's what's put them on the map, and it's one of the biggest revenue generating things in the country. So the manager of that is very, very important, and he loves what we're doing.
And they're open to people coming from other countries to start businesses there. Is that right?
Yes, Panama is really open for business. They have something called the Friendly Nations Visa. So they make it really easy for entrepreneurs from other countries to come to Panama, start a business, and use Panama as your base of operations. That's how I first got involved with Panama, because I was actually at an Acapulco 2 years ago looking for looking to set up my second residency. And I found someone that introduced me to a lawyer there, and then I got my residency. And then it just happened to be that Chad and Nadia came to Panama. That was just the perfect place for them to come for many reasons. And so as they were getting on the plane, I said, okay, here's my lawyer. He can get you set up with residency. Here's a place. Here's an Airbnb. This is the best place for you to stay. And here's a driver that can drive you around and take care of you and make sure you're all set up. And so it just was like boom, 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 boom. Everything just lined up.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I also wanted to ask you about aquaculture. So what are the plans for Ocean Builders to integrate aquaculture and Panama is open to that kind of development, that kind of business development?
Yeah, so that's something that I'm really interested in. Of course, I want Ocean Builders to be successful as a business, but I kind of have my own personal thing. I saw what Ixtli, the original seastead in Thailand, was doing with becoming an eco-sustainable habitat. Becoming a habitat for fish and for the ecosystem. It was just amazing what had happened in just 2 months of Ixtli, or the original seastead, being in the water in Thailand. There was just thousands and thousands of fish. It was like overwhelming. I've never seen so many fish in a small area, even though we were scuba diving for the 3 or 4 days previous to that. Mm-hmm. I hadn't seen so many fish as I did that in that 20 or 30 minute dive. Mm-hmm. And the seastead became a habitat, and I was underwater, maybe 15 meters below the surface of the water, and there's the bottom of the ladder was actually open, was actually like cut open. And there's this little fish that had its head popped out, you know, it was peeking out, and it was like, wow, that's really interesting. And Chad and I were joking afterwards, it's like a fish hotel. It's like, we should have a fish hotel on the seastead and have places for fish to live. And then that idea kind of evolved to the point of like, let's actually engineer something. Let's make this into a conscious thing that we're doing, not just let it happen by accident. Let's and see what we can do to make it a better place for fish and for coral. So there's some really cool technologies in that regard that we're doing a lot of research with. We have a marine toxicologist coming down to our incubator, hopefully in the next week. And he's going to start just hacking the ocean. And he is going to help us figure out how to bring life back to the area we're in right now. The coral has really been compromised. 7 years ago, it was beautiful. It was an oasis. And now there's, you go down there, it's pretty depressing what's left. So he's going to help us set up some projects and see what we can do to bring the ocean back.
Very cool. Very cool. So let's talk about all of the cool tools and the bells and whistles that are going to be in the next version of the Ocean Builder Sea Pod. So what are some of your favorite things that you guys are working on?
I guess my favorite thing changes depending on when you're talking to me, because and it may change from week to week because there's so many things we're working on. The latest thing I'm really excited about is the walls. Like, people have been asking, how are we going to make these walls? These, if you've seen the designs with the all curves and white walls with the black lines, random lines moving through at the house, like, how are we going to make those? And the architect aquitect we were working with, Ken Olthaus from Netherlands, helped us. He actually led us in the right direction, but I've been so overwhelmed. There's just so much to do that I didn't have time to fully look into it. He recommended a product called Corian, which is made by DuPont, and it's 30% acrylic and 70% natural minerals. And when you heat it to 300 degrees Fahrenheit, or 180 or something Celsius, I think, then it becomes moldable. It's called thermoforming. Then you can actually mold it into whatever shape you want. So we can take this material that has the feel of like a stone. It's a really nice, high quality material that feels amazing in your hand. And so we want to make the walls with this. We want to make the floors and the ceiling with this. So the house has a really solid feel. So it feels like you're grounded on earth in a solid home, instead of like when you knock on the walls, it feels like it's hollow and there's nothing there. We want to have something that feels like a real home, that feels solid, feels like it's on land, and feels incredible and beautiful. And then we have a collaboration with Mario Romano, who has a technology to put texture onto the walls. So you can now engrave these really beautiful patterns onto the surfaces and have these designs in the walls kind of come to life in a way that is really very unique. And what's you can also do with them is go one step further and have backlighting on them, so the walls actually are like have this glow to them, which is really cool.
So we're not talking about a rustic tiny home cobbled together floating out in the middle of nowhere.
No. So this is, I'm building this because I'm building what I want to live in. And I want to live in something very futuristic, that has all the comforts of home, that is like one of the smartest homes ever built, and just is very eco-friendly, and not just eco-friendly, but eco-restorative. And I don't want to make any compromises. Like I keep on telling people that, like, especially the bathroom experience has to be amazing, because you don't want to get in a shower and not have enough pressure or not have enough hot water, or the toilet smells like a lot of boats. If you've been on a boat, the toilets don't smell very good. So that's usually because they're using salt water in the toilets, and that causes urine to smell really bad. Mm-hmm. So we want the bathroom experience to be top-notch and every other experience to be top-notch.
All right. So what's the overall business plan for Ocean Builders going forward?
Right now we are building our manufacturing plant to build sea pods. And by the time we return to Panama, we should have the first layer of concrete fully poured, and then it's going to take about 30 days for the foundation to harden and settle, and then we can put the foundation over top. We can put the building structure over top. So business plan moving forward, we're all in, like we're all in, all of us. We're working very long, crazy hours to try to bring this to the world. And we expect to have the first seastead in the water in the middle of the summer, maybe sooner. So we might not have all the bells and whistles on it, but it will be something where you can come and physically stand in the sea pod and experience it.
Well, and I'm not sure, did we talk about the 3D printer and how that makes this design possible?
So I don't think we did yet. So we are getting we have a custom-made 3D printer. It's 20 feet by 16 feet by 8 feet tall. So it's bigger than a lot of rooms. It's just massive. We can 3D print parts that are 2,560 cubic feet in size. So it's just really big. And so we're able to print a small house with it, and we're going to do that. We're going to print it in sections because it will take several of those kind of size pieces to build a house. Mm-hmm. And it's allowing us to do some things that we wouldn't be able to do any other way, or we wouldn't be able to do it affordably. And it's just opening up a lot of doors. I think years ago we heard that the 3D printing revolution was going to change the world. But so far it hasn't really seemed like it's done that. It hasn't lived up to that. But I'm kind of on the inside now, and I'm seeing what's going on. And it's just getting to the point. It's just right on the edge. We're going to go over the edge really soon. And then it's really going to, I think, blow us away, what this is going to do. So some companies are already 3D printing concrete homes. For very, very reasonable prices. Mm-hmm. And so we're making 3D printed homes on the ocean.
All right. So tell us a bit to wrap up, how can people get involved and what are the different ways that people get involved? You know, can they contribute money? Can they come live and talk and remind us about the incubator and how to get involved with the incubator?
Okay. So if you're passionate about this and you want to help out and you want to be part of the new frontier that's evolving and that's growing out of the sea, then we'd love to hear from you. You can go to oceanbuilders.com, make sure you sign up for our newsletter, and we'll keep you informed on what's going on, so you'll know everything that's going on. Contact us on email, info@oceanbuilders.com. And we also have an incubator link to sign up for our incubator if you want to jump on a plane and come down and help us build something amazing. If you have different skills. We need skills of every kind to make this happen. We need people, social media people. We need people with marketing. We need people that are fiberglass experts, welders, underwater divers, welders, 3D printing experts. We want like 3D printing people that can hack our machine and make it better and better and better. And do, because there's so many material options we have that are available, and there's new things coming available for 3D printing tech that we need someone that's just hacking the printer and just doing some really cool things with it, and coming up with new materials and new things we couldn't even think of a couple of years ago or a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
So we'd love to have you come down and participate, be part of the wave.
And how can people start purchasing their home and what if in renting and doing a share? Can people do that now?
Yes, so we are open for pre-sales right now. It's really easy. You can put a $100 deposit down, fully refundable, and it can be on a sea pod, on a land pod if you want to have your sea pod on land, or a sea platform, which is like our home without the home part on top. It would just be the foundation. You can put whatever you want on top. So like $100 refundable deposit. We just want to see how many people are serious about moving forward. And then we can start gauging, okay, how many are we going to start to prepare to build? And then we can get in contact with you and start moving life forward on the sea.
And you accept Bitcoin.
Yes, we accept Bitcoin. We accept traditional money of various kinds. You can buy a whole CPOD, or you can buy, some people are, they just want to get started, get their feet wet, so to speak, and start with like a share of a CPOD. And if you buy up to like $10,000 worth of a share, then that would get you a week stay per year. And if you buy a whole thing, then it starts at $195,000. And you can buy less than 10, if you want to buy a $200 share, then you can buy a $200 share. And that's also on the Bitcoin network. So it's like a token traded on top of the Bitcoin network. So you can buy and sell your shares. You can buy more shares and get more time every year. And then if you don't want to use your share in the year, then you can rent it out. We'll rent it out for you. And it earns like 10 or 20% per year. Return on investment.
So part of my job means that I get to see a lot of the criticism of seasteading. Is there anything that you'd like to add about the possibilities, and is it happening now?
Like just the doubters that. Well, I think the plan we have to move forward makes a lot of sense. Having a business plan that is like a huge project that takes hundreds of millions of dollars or billions of dollars, that doesn't make sense. Our goal is to make one incredible house that will impress the shit out of you, and you want to buy one and get it, or just come and visit and then tell your friends about it, and they'll tell friends about it, and then we all of a sudden everyone it wants them because we did a good job.
Thank you so much, Grant.
Thank you very much for having me, Carly.
The Seasteading Today podcast is produced by John Bush. Your host is Carly Jackson. Send feedback and questions to podcast@seasteading.org. To support the podcast and the Seasteading mission, go to seasteading.org/donate. If you'd like to learn more, read the book, Seasteading: How Floating Nations Will Restore the Environment, Enrich the Poor, Cure the Sick, and Liberate Humanity from Politicians. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast feed, and we'll save you a spot on a seastead.